Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 5, The Assignment. Teleplay by Bradley Thompson and David Weddle, and directed by Alan Croker. The Assignment aired on October 28th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, after returning from the fire caves on Bajor, Keiko's body is controlled by an alien life form that forces her husband, Miles O'Brien, to do its bidding, or else face the death of his wife. Elise, we'll start this episode as we do most episodes. Did you or did you not remember this episode?
Vaguely. There weren't, like, specific
What did
things.
You remember?
I remembered...
What did you remember?
I remembered, don't worry. Sorry, I started singing, like, in the air tonight. I think there were some of the glances and the way that Rosalind Chow was acting towards Miles, towards Colomini, that, like, resonated and felt familiar. But, like, I wasn't remembering, like, the whole plot or any of that.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about the, like... I mean, the B plot kind of intersects, it like dovetails into the O'Brien stuff, but I kind of had forgotten about all the ROM stuff in this episode.
I love the ROM stuff in this episode too.
Yeah.
I really like this episode. Keiko doesn't get to be in the mirror universe like everyone else, you know? Or like, I don't think she has. So it is really the closest that Rosalind Chow has to like, kind of being a mirror universe character because she's possessed, so it's like an alternate version of Keiko, even though it's not her personality at all. And I just think that Rosalind Chow is having a lot of fun in this role. I really, really enjoyed watching her be like out of her normal character.
Yeah, they really let Chow cook in this episode. Yes. And I think this episode, like, low-key rules, and, like, more than I even,
yeah,
like, remember
it
doing.
I had a
I
lot
do
of
think
fun
it is
with
because
it.
Chow's performance as, like, the possessed, like, Pod Wraith is just so good, and, like, a lot of the idea of, like, the tension, and for lack of a better word, like, the horror, like, at the birthday party scene or whatever, is it's, like, we know she's not normal, but... she's putting it on, and it's like you see, it's like that whole like seeing the bomb under the table thing, and everything's having a normal dinner scene.
Yeah,
like, yeah. It's so good.
I was doing a little research on the episode, and Colmini had said that he really enjoyed this episode. Here's a quote from him. That was great. Roz's performance in that I thought was spectacular. It was the first time she really had an opportunity to do her thing. You got to see her range in a way you hadn't before, playing Keiko and the alien horror. From my end, it was good writing and good drama. It was a solid idea to have Miles do something against his will, to have him be coerced. It was a good episode, very strong. That was from the Deep Space Nine magazine. But yeah, like, I agree with everything he said.
Yeah, so good.
So, guess what?
What?
The impetus for our podcast name is finally revealed in this episode.
Exactly. We have our first Paw Wraith sighting of the inspiration for Pod Race.
Yes, which is so funny since we didn't fully, like, I didn't fully remember this episode. So it's just really funny that.
Yeah.
As we learn in this episode, the Paw Wraiths are non-corporeal, that is a word that is always so hard for me, beings that are basically the enemies to the Bajoran prophets. They originally lived alongside the prophets, but were eventually banished to the fire caves, which, if you remember, is where Keiko had just been. And this is where we sing the Taylor Swift song False God to our listeners. I don't know if you know that song, but it's really good. I think you would like it. It's on Lover.
Nice. Lover is an album I have not listened to.
Lover is an album that you should listen to, and then we should debrief, because I have lots of feelings about it. No. It's actually, I love most of it, but there is one song on it that I skip usually, and I don't usually skip any Taylor Swift songs, but the rest of it is excellent.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Sorry to the guy from Fall Out Boy or Panic at the Disco. One of those guys is in the show. I don't know from those bands. But yeah, it's the song "Me."
Panic at the Disco's. Is it like Brandon Urie or whatever? Is that who's in the song?
See. Yeah, like Panic at the Disco. Brendan.
Actually,
yeah.
Just one dude. Brendan. Yeah, Brent. Not Brendan. Not Brendan.
Yeah, it's not Brendan. Sorry, it is Brendan in that song. So yeah. I never know those. Yeah. Those songs. I mean, I don't know from Fall Out Boy or Panic at the Disco is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
In any case.
So you do not write. So you're not a I Write Sins Not Tragedies fan?
I don't even know what that is. I mean.
It was like the first kind of big Panic at the
Disco. Oh, I think like, I. Oh, I know
well
that.
Well, imagine as I'm pacing.
No, that song I know. Yes.
And I can't help but to
I probably could sing most of that song. I just didn't know.
What a beautiful wedding. Okay, we're done.
That's the one with the cheating.
Thanks, folks. This has been Pod Race. We'll see you next week. No, just kidding.
Is that the one with the cheating in it? Like the close.
Can I chime in with
yes.
How many people?
Yeah, that I know that song. Door. False God's a great song by Taylor Swift. Everyone should listen to it.
When does Tortured Parts Department come out?
On the 19th of this month. I have already. I actually had to email the Taylor Swift shop because I pre-ordered the vinyl and I'm moving, and I had to see if they would change the address on my pre-order, and they did. So good job, Taylor Swift vinyl shop.
Thank you, taylorswiftshop.com. Sorry, .com.
Back to Star Trek. This episode actually went into production after the next episode, which is Trials and Tribulations, which if you have not seen that, once you watch it, you will know why that needed a longer production time.
Post-production, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then too, and like out of that in terms of like, you know, BTS stuff, that's behind the scenes, not the South Korean K-pop band.
I was actually thinking, I don't even like know a BTS song, but I definitely thought of that BTS first right now instead of behind the scenes.
Yeah. This episode, Kira isn't featured in it, and I think this is like pretty much one of the first one. I think the first one, if not one of the first ones, of the entire series where Kira doesn't appear at all because Nana went into early labor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So the birthday party scene was originally going to be a Bajoran festival of some kind, but they rewrote it to the birthday party to explain kind of
which is
Nana's
funny
absence
because Miles' birthday is in September and this aired in October. So then like when I was reading the notes like on Wikipedia, it was like this episode is set in September. I was like, okay, guys.
Do you remember when it was last September? Mm-hmm. And this is also Thompson and Weddell's first go round of writing the screenplay as part of like the writing staff proper. They originally like pitched and then wrote the Rules of Engagement, our very Clancy-esque episode courtroom drama with Worf last season.
I also saw that they overall did like about 40 episodes with this and Voyager. I don't remember if there was another series that they wrote on as well. Okay.
Yeah, that whole like idea of who they moved over to the Voyager's room after DS9 wrapped. It's interesting, right? Because like Ron Moore moved over and I think he only worked on a couple episodes. And he's like, yeah, the vibes are off.
The vibes are off. I backed the Voyager documentary by the same group that did the DS9 one that you backed, and it's not been out yet.
Yeah.
But I like got a poster or something from it. I mean, it was a digital file of a poster. I didn't give them that much money. But I'm like anxious to watch it. The funny part is when I backed it, I hadn't like really watched Voyager yet, and I've been finished with Voyager for so long now. So.
When are they planning on like?
I'm not really sure. Let me look.
I'll see. It feels like a long time, but I'm sure like COVID is.
I really think that. My computer did not like that website, so I will get back to you later with that information. I mean, they email me, so I don't think they said in an email. But yeah, I like went to the website and it was like, we are not trying to let you go on to that website because you are going to like have your computer destroyed or something. They haven't updated us since February. As of December, they were still editing the film.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so I guess, you know, it's coming.
Mm-hmm. So is Christmas.
Don't skip that far ahead, please. In our B plot that kind of is related to our A plot, the only reason I even separated it in our notes is because Rom gets like his own little ending at the end of the episode that's like separate from, you know, the main plot. So first of all, I wanted to have both breakfasts that Rom ordered in this episode. Like I just wanted like corned beef hash and pancakes and pineapple. Is basically, I was really hungry when I was rewatching and writing my notes earlier that I actually like ordered in breakfast because I just was like, I need to eat. And as brothers do, Quark tries to shit on Rom's night shift waste duty. Pun intended. I was like really proud of
a pretty shitty joke.
I know. I appreciate your pun as well. And I just feel like that's just how they are as brothers. But I do love that Rom sticks up for himself now and corrects Quark and talks about how he really likes his job. And I think he really does. It's really sweet how Rom wants to connect with all of his coworkers too. Like he wants to like, let's all have Ractaginos.
What are you guys drinking?
Yeah, those swing shift people were not very friendly with him. I am really glad that he ended up getting moved to day shift and that they like seem to be getting along better. Because he was working on the swing shift, because the swing shift, if I understand correct, is like it's like half day shift, half night shift or something like that.
Yeah, it's like you'd start like in the later afternoon and like finish before the night folks start. So it'd be like plus or I mean, DS9 is 26 hours in the day because Bajor in science fiction. But it's like when you start at like 3 or 4 and then end at like 11.
Yeah.
Right? 10 or 11.
So
or
12 or it's whatever, funny because right? like that's the like our normal second shift at my warehouse. So I think we have one swing shift person that does like 10. Like they start at 10 and they go. So they're like partially on day shift and partially on night shift because we don't have a third shift right now.
Yeah.
Interesting. I did really laugh that when Miles like pops in to tell swing shift like that he's changing what they're working on and like without like knowing what it is, Rom was like Katniss at the beginning of Hunger Games, like I volunteer as tribute, and Miles is like I got it. I just want to make sure you're all working.
Oh, I really like doing that.
A lot of the rest of Rom's storyline does tie into the main plot, so I'm not going to go through all of it, but I was just really impressed that Rom is so competent at his job that he figured out what the Powraith's plan is before Miles did. You know, they're focusing a chronoton beam toward the wormhole, which is something that Miles thinks is harmless because he's like, it's harmless to humans probably. And Rom's like, yeah, but it can like really kill the wormhole aliens. There's something with the temporal disruption, and Rom is very smart.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's even like skipping ahead that it's like, you know, when he's told to play dumb, he's like, oh, I've played that role a lot.
I know. I really loved that. I do think like, I really enjoyed getting a lot of the exposition about the Powraiths from Rom, who learned everything from Leeta, which was off screen. Yeah. But I think, and I know this, some people may think this is a spoiler, but I really don't care. This is foreshadowing, like, Rom and Leeta are, like, become a thing. So it's, like, really cute that they're hinting about how they have, like, off screen conversations about prophets and, like, deep shit. Do you think that Rom is the most loyal Star Trek character, like, in all of the series? Because I kind of do.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a case for that. But yeah, no, I just, it's Rom, the implications in Rom and Leela have been doing some late night talking song by Harry Styles.
Yeah, it's great. I would read, like, a little novella of their, like, hangouts. At the end of the episode, because of all of his dedication and good work, Rom gets promoted to date shift, and he starts to eat breakfast like the day shifters do. And they actually seem like they want to be his friends, unlike those stupid swing shift people.
Sounds good.
Yeah, good job, Rom. And for our top story tonight.
Our top story.
A little typewriter. Or what's it called?
Keiko?
What is that called? The like the ticker tape or whatever.
Yeah. This is just coming in on the wire. Keiko O'Brien is possessed by a space demon. More on that at 11.
Okay, so I am really amused by this opening scene where Julian has killed Keiko's plants, and Molly is like, "Mom's gonna be pissed." Like Julian's like her older brother or something. First of all, like, why is Julian even on house chore duty in the O'Brien's quarters? Like,
she's away. Keiko's been away.
I understand this, but it's like, I'm fully in on the fact that Keiko, Miles, Julian, and Kira are a throuple. Or, sorry, are a polycule. I also think it's funny that in this polycule, I firmly do not think that Julian and Kira, like, I think famously they don't fuck in the polycule, which is funny since they're together in real life at this point in the production of the show. But I do think, like, I think Keiko likes that Miles has Kira and likes that Miles has Julian. Like, I don't even know if Keiko is, like, having sex with Kira, but like I definitely think she wants Miles to, and I think she wants Miles to have sex with Julian, so I think it's just like a really fun thing to think about.
Yeah, and like this episode made me kind of wish that we saw more of the like Keiko and Julian dynamic as like people who are like in various ways like close with Miles. Yeah. And Miles is like the hinge is like, what's their relationship like when he comes in? And he doesn't know she's possessed, but like with the basil to like apologize, and it's just all like, yeah,
like they seem like they're really close friends, honestly, or like people that get along like and enjoy each other's company, like they care about each other. I also think that, and I am 100% giving Keiko credit for this, Molly has the best boundaries of any child I've ever seen on television. They're like trying, Miles is trying to get Molly to be the one to tell Keiko about the bonsai trees, and Molly's like, hell no. But then he wants like Julian there with him. I'm like, what do you need, like a moral support friend to tell your wife about the plants? Although I have to say, throughout the entire episode, I really was wondering what Keiko like would have said about the plants, and I think it would have been funny to have like a little thing at the end where she like did comment on the plants. But I really love their conversation at the end of the episode so much that I really would not change it. But it would have been cute to have like a little like, what happened to my plants?
Yeah. It's like, thanks for saving me, but also fuck you for me.
I was watching this with Tessa, and she kind of pointed out like a lot's been going on with Keiko's body lately. Like, you have the pregnancy and then the pregnancy swap, and now this, and it's just like it kind of reminded me like how they put Deanna through so much shit on TNG body stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, too, it's like as good as like I think the episode is because of Rosalind and her performance, we never really get this much just Keiko.
Yeah,
right? Because it's like, that's why they like sent her off all the time, where like, you know, early on, because like they couldn't figure out what they wanted to do with her, and then they did the school thing, and like, you know, and then finally she's like, she's gonna go be a botanist on Bajor part-time now, bye. Like, you know, so Not great, Bob.
I did
appreciate too.
No, you go.
No, I was gonna say I appreciated that Jake was at the birthday party.
Oh yeah,
because again we haven't seen him in. Miles,
I did
want to
say something
like,
before
some kind of closeness.
I did want to see something before like we get to that. I was really amused that Miles thinks that this is like a sexy game at first, like. He thinks that she's role playing with him, and that is wonderful. Yeah. I don't think they'll ever do a role play now because of this,
new.
But it sounds like it's something that like has happened before. If that has mm-hmm. been his first reaction.
Yeah.
I would say most of the tension in this episode is really between the Pawraith and Miles, like as he has to hide what's happening from everyone on the station. You know, the Pawraith has certain things they want Miles to do, but is not really giving him reasons why. Like, he is just threatening Keika. Sorry, they. I don't think a Pawraith would have a gender. They would just, like, tell Miles what to do and threaten Keiko and Molly if he did not participate. It's very creepy, but I really enjoyed it. Like, I enjoyed the scary, spooky horror vibes in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. It's rad.
I wanted to mention a little bit of something about the production of this, or I guess about the writing process. The two writers were kind of unsure what direction to take this episode in, and they had like a chat with Hans Beimler, who has, you know, been working with the show for a while now. And kind of Beimler was like, this is a Miles must suffer episode. And so that really helped them kind of guide them like to the vibe of the episode. But they also wanted it to be like one of those things where everyone comes to the party and you and your wife are in a fight and like you don't cancel and you have to pretend like everything's normal. Like it did have that kind of vibe too. And that's a really fun thing for me. Like I really enjoy that type of tone.
yeah no, for sure. I know we already kind of talked about it, but just Julian is just so charming in this episode.
They made him I thought they made him so silly. Like he, I mean, I don't mean that negatively, like he killed the plans.
No,
he like makes up a surgery so he doesn't have to go tell Keika.
That's such a funny joke. I left a patient on
and
table.
I'm like, did you really like he probably didn't, but like it just the idea of it is very funny to me. I'm sure his nurse, I'm gonna call her Nurse Jackie Taylor. I'm sure Nurse Jackie Taylor, who I don't know if we ever see again, like is thrilled that he left a patient on the table.
Yeah, that's just anything to be able to leave there.
Yeah. Oh my god, I'm trying to think of things like I've said to like have to get out of things. I will literally say anything to get out of stuff. I am fully guilty of that kind of thing. I'm giving away all my secrets. The birthday party is so fucking tense for Miles. Like, mm-hmm. The way that the Pawraith is pretending to be Keiko in front of everyone is, like, it's so eerie. I also was laughing at that scotch that Keiko gives Miles. It was like four fingers deep.
Well, the Pawraiths, like Frankie, they say relax.
I was like, is she trying to get him drunk or something? Maybe that's just how much scotch Miles normally takes. Yeah, I was really happy.
Well, you gotta come down from all that coffee in the afternoon. But still does.
That was so funny. He never has a coffee in the afternoon. And he's like, I always do. I love it. Yeah, so I liked what you were talking about with Jake. I like that we get more information about the Pawraiths because of Jake's in-character fascination with them too.
Yeah.
Although I can't imagine what it was like for the I'm sure the Pawraiths doesn't actually care that they were called weird to their faces basically.
Your beard is weird. Yeah, no, totally.
I liked when she was like playing dumb and is like, oh, the Pawraiths aren't real, and like Miles is just pacing behind her. Like, this is the most stressful birthday party of his life. Do you think I have a replicator question for you. Do you think that when Keiko, you know, puts the cake back in the replicator, that it's like going away forever? Or do you think that like occasionally, like every night until it goes bad, they can be like, oh, we'll have a piece of that cake?
Yeah, I would imagine that it just gets like converted back into like energy. Because if you just want a piece of cake, you could just replicate it and then it would be fresh.
That's true.
Right?
It just made me sad like, I think that the cake went like uneaten.
That you don't get leftovers?
I wanted leftover cake.
Where you just stand at the fridge and eat it and it's still kind of cool. Yeah. And you like don't care about warming it. Yeah. No fair. Cake.
Do you think it would have been too much for Keiko to like hit on, or for the Pot Wraith to like hit on Miles like in bed, because she made them sleep together? And I was like, you know, I mean, I guess that would have been rapey.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely would have had consent issues, but I also don't think the Pot Wraiths are interested in intimacy in that way.
Yeah, I mean, she has that whole conversation about how she's annoyed about physical intimacy and she's bothered by Molly constantly needing to touch her all the time. So yeah, you're probably right. Sexy nightgown, though. Every time that Miles thinks about like telling someone what's going on, the Pot Wraith like threatens Keiko or Molly. Like, then, you know, he kind of decides that he's going to tell Sisko, and the Pot Wraith throws Keiko's body off the second level of the fucking promenade.
It's all for you, Damien.
Oh my God. And it's very much like, I guess, lucky that she fell in a certain way. I don't know. That was very weird. I did read, like, an error that, like, the parietal lobe is, like, something in your brain. So it's really funny that Julian said that she fractured her parietal lobe. Like, it was a bone or something. Because that is not a bone.
No, I was just thinking, one of those, like, audios, like, you see on the reels, like, don't touch me, you'll be fine. It stuck in my head because I was, like, watching it before. We were podcasting. How did you feel? So, like, circling back to, like, the ROM thing, and obviously, like you said, Keiko's testing O'Brien and making him do these modifications to the stations, like, literally holding Keiko hostage. ROM's a keener, so he gets, like, you know, reluctantly for Miles brought into it because he can't do the work in the time all by himself. And then ROM gets caught. How did you feel about
that? I was really upset. I was kind of like, a little fuck you, Miles, for like making ROM like take the hit for all of this. Like, but it did give us that really funny scene where Odo tells Miles, it was like pulling teeth to even get him to admit his name. Because earlier when he was originally like asking ROM for help, Miles tells him that everyone's gonna like play dumb toward him about what's going on, which is like, you poor ROM, you like sweet summer child, like not knowing that you're being lied to right now. And he's like, they won't even get my name. And Miles is like, everyone knows your name. And he's like, well, they won't get me to confirm it. That was very funny. I will say that like there was one thing that really amused me, and like the way that Miles kept checking his like timer, like his 13-hour timer, felt like completely legitimate to my life. Like, I'll set a timer on my Apple HomePod for like my laundry or something, and I'll be like, hey, blah blah blah, I'm not gonna say her name because she will think I'm talking to her, how much left of my timer, and then I know like to go down in 10 minutes or whatever and switch the laundry over. I think the least believable part of this episode was that Dax was up at 3 in the morning checking anomalies because it relaxes her. And then she was like, listen, all y'all, it's a sabotage.
Sabotage. Odo was actually like really surprisingly competent in this episode.
Yeah. Too. I mean, he didn't have too many people to be crappy toward. Yeah, he like was he like eventually is on to Miles, cover because Miles was like trying to cover his tracks and stuff. But like you,
what I did, go ahead.
I mean, you're covering your tracks, but you're not covering for the cover of your tracks, you know?
Yeah. Well, part of me wonders, did he think, I mean, did he want to get caught? Like, I don't know.
Maybe. I did like that, the way that the episode kind of ends is a surprise to us. Like, we think that Miles is going through with the Pawraith's plan to shoot that Chronoton thing at the wormhole. But
which to kill them, which Rom figures out before Miles does what they were doing.
Yeah, I said that earlier, I think. But right, you're fine. But what I'm saying is like Miles adjusted something so that it hits the runabout instead of the wormhole, and so it kills the Pawraith instead of the wormhole aliens. And I was appreciative just that the audience didn't know that that was going to happen, so we did get some surprises.
I'm just glad that it didn't seem to harm Keiko physically and just
kill the Pawraith. Me too, because like sometimes when there's possessed things, like if you kill it, it kills the host as well.
Yeah. Now I was thinking about it, Miles is a god slayer. All hail Miles O'Brien, the most important man in Star Trek.
The nexus of Star Trek.
Of time and space.
We have a really nice chat at the end that I referenced earlier with Miles and Keiko talking about what happened to them. I just feel so bad for her. She's like, she's talking about it like her mind was like almost in quicksand and like couldn't get out to like express itself. And that just sounds really awful. Guess who's back?
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend.
I'm trying to think if there was anything else that I wanted to talk about besides what we said already. Oh, every time Miles talked to the computer asking for help, I was kind of just like, someone's going to find this. And like there were times where he said things to the computer where like Keiko was in the next room and I'm like, the Pawraith is going to hear you. Like what are, like they can be anywhere.
They're like the Spanish Inquisition. They can pop up at any time. Hmm. No one sees them coming.
Sure.
Well, that's a Monty Python
reference. Oh, I know. I'm just not familiar with a lot of Monty Python. It was quoted heavily in that movie Sliding Doors by John Hannah. Mm. Mm. By John Hannah's character, whose name I do not recall.
Speaking of John Hannah, have you seen the third Mummy movie?
No, I tried. With, like, Jet Li? So, like, I don't know if you remember that you gave me the digital codes. Oh, the DVDs. Yeah.
Or the Blu-ray.
Yeah. So I watched the first. I had seen the first one many times. It's great.
Yeah.
The second one was enjoyable. The third one, I like got like 15 minutes in and I was like, I can't. So I want to watch it, but I think I might need to like watch it with friends and like make fun of it while I'm watching it. Bad. Yeah.
It's so bad, I almost gave it 5 stars. And
I remember when you told me that when it first came out.
Yeah.
Or not, sorry, not when it first came out, when this digital code exchange happened, whenever that was.
Well, and it's so funny, too, because, like, obviously Brendan Fraser's in it, and Michelle Yeoh's in it, and there's this one, like, wild
scene. Wait, I didn't remember that Michelle Yeoh was in it.
I don't know if you'd gotten to her yet.
No, I don't think so.
Depending on how far into it you were. But, yeah, there's, like, I think I've tweeted out the scene, but it's just so funny to think that they both won Oscars in the same year, too.
That's funny.
But, yeah. All right. Now.
Yeah, Mummy 3, haven't seen it. Haven't seen any Scorpion King anything, either.
I feel like I saw the first one in the theater when it came out, like, with a friend, but then I don't think I ever watched it or any of the other ones again.
I, like, feel like Dwayne Johnson is also just like not a draw for me as like
I don't disagree. Like, it's just, you think about like his like career over the last like 20 years, it's like kind of interesting.
Yeah,
like, I think you could do some like interesting like analysis there of like wider culture, but
I'm
on the face value level,
I'm way more interested in Dave Bautista and a little bit lesser extent, but like still more than Dwayne Johnson, John Cena. Yeah.
Well, Batista, the three of them, if we're talking former wrestlers that are amazing. Like, working actors, he's the best actor.
Oh, 100%. I just rewatched Spectre this weekend, and like, he's so menacing in that. I love it.
Still haven't seen it. I keep forgetting about it.
When's the last? I feel like I've failed myself.
No, I've seen
that you haven't seen.
No, no. I've seen Spectre. I have Spectre. I haven't seen No Time to Die.
I just finished rewatching No Time to Die, like when you texted me right before we were podcasting, because I had watched most of it last night, and then I had an hour left, and I had finished my notes at 11:30, and I was like, "Yes, I have 90 minutes to finish an hour left of a movie." I was very proud of myself.
Nice.
I'm a No Time to Die enjoyer.
Yeah, and then just to finish the thought, John Cena, I think, probably has the best comedic timing of all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I still haven't seen Peacemaker. Right. I should watch that, because I really enjoyed his character in The Suicide Squad. Anyway.
It's just too many things to watch.
Exactly. Have you...
Just have to...
I mean, I'm just going to, like, keep talking about Star Trek real quick. Have you started watching Discovery Season 5 yet? I have not.
No, I haven't either. It's because, like, they moved it all. Like, I don't...
Oh, it's on a different thing.
I don't have all the plethora of streaming services right now.
Yeah, because they're expensive as fuck.
And, like, yeah. And, like, they moved all the Star Trek, like, to Paramount Plus from Crave. And I don't even have Crave right now, but there's a bunch of stuff I need to catch up on Crave. Right. Like,
I got you.
So I was, like, eventually going to do it again. Like, I still haven't even seen the new season of True Detective, but...
Oh, yeah. I think my dad has only watched half of that. But yeah, so I've been rewatching Discovery with Tessa, who hasn't seen it before, and we're like mid season 3. Yeah. So I think I'm going to wait to watch season 5 till we're caught up.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do our superlatives, which is a word I am stealing from Tasia, cuz when we do fangbangers, we have a couple things at the end. Very similar to what we do here.
Yeah.
And she always calls them superlatives, and I'm like, that is true and a great word to use.
Nice.
The ones there are chaotic and horny. So what's most chaotic and what is most horny?
Yeah, nice. Speaking of horniness, now it's time for the Altair Water Thirst Quencher. Altair Water first being mentioned in Star Trek, in Star Trek 3, The Search for Spock, also possibly being a reference to Alta from Altair 4 in Forbidden Planet, also known as Shakespeare's Space, The Tempest. Elise, who are you thirsting for this week?
I am thirsting for role-playing Keiko and Miles, stranger play. Miles, I make the rules. I was like, hell yeah. I mean, yeah. It was great. I was really into it. What about you?
Nice. I mean, that was probably the closest, but like the boner died very quickly when you realize what's going on. But then it's like you go on the thought experiment of like, oh, they've obviously done this before. That's odd.
When we were watching it, AJ was like at post, because we were like chatting, posted a GIF from what's it called? Futurama. Where I guess, what's his face? The main Fry was like
Fry.
Yeah, he was like with those like Amazon, the tall ladies, and he was like the caption was like, "I'm aroused," like scared aroused, and I'm like, "Yeah, that is this show, this episode for sure." What would you say is the most Star Trek thing?
I mean, I think you hit it right on the nail on the head with your first point about it's a Miles Must Suffer episode, which is a very Deep Space Nine. Yeah. What about you?
I think that, but I also think just like having a possession in the episode, like there's been a lot of possession episodes in all of Star Trek.
Yeah. And what I did appreciate about this one, and they talked about this like on Memory Alpha and I think on the DS9 Companion, is like, instead of doing it as like kind of like a one-off alien of the week thing, which is functionally what this episode is, but they also like tied it in with, you know, the lore and like the prophets.
Yeah. And we learned stuff that we need to know also. I guess that's kind of what you're saying.
Yeah. And then again, like, spoilers, because obviously our podcast is named after them. But again, it comes back.
Yeah.
And it's like part of a big part of, especially season 7.
Yes. Agree. There's a lot going on here.
Kind of that... to our conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's information that is good to know about this group that is important to Bajor culture and religion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. And you can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, M-A-T-T-Y-H-U-G-H. You can catch us together at Blue Sky and Instagram at PodRace. And you can also email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.